Hi there, podcast listeners. This is Harmony Hunter. We celebrate Black History in February, and all month long, we'll be bringing you a mixture of interviews, old and new, focusing on the lives of African Americans in colonial Virginia. We hope you enjoy this February 2007 interview Lloyd Dobbins had with interpreter James Ingram, who portrays Gowan Pamphlet.
Hi, welcome to Colonial Williamsburg, past and present on history.org. This is Behind the Scenes, where you meet the people who work here. That's my job. I'm Lloyd Dobbins, and mostly I ask questions. This time, I'm asking James Ingram. And at Colonial Williamsburg, he's Gowan Pamphlet. Okay, you got to be a Baptist preacher with an all-black Baptist church, which had to be a threat to slave owners.
Well, ironically, again, early on, I always said it hadn't learn separatism. They hadn't learned that type of racism yet, you know. So they had a lot of their slaves attending the First Baptist Church with their permission.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, we have a document in 1781, a man by the name of Aspen, he's an accountant, he came through to register the Baptists in Virginia. He has Gowan documented with a congregation of 200 members, and he is the leader of that congregation. Now, the irony of this is the fact that he's a slave. So he must have had permission from Jane Vobe, his owner at the King's Arms Tavern, to have this congregation. So the real question is, what is it that Mrs. Vobe, you know, what is it about her that makes her really different than a lot of slave owners here? You know, what is that relationship like? We know that Thomas Vobe died 17 and 15, left her in great debt. And normally, when a master dies, slaves are sold to pay off the debt. But the question is, what happened after that period of time? Because in 1 year's time, for some reason, she paid off that debt. And I mean, it was a tremendous amount of money. Did the slaves help her? Did Gowan's mother help her? What was it that allowed her later on to allow him so much liberty to go about preaching, knowing that wasn't in carriage? Then later on, form a congregation right after the Revolution, and that congregation grew. From 200 in 1781, we have it actually documented, meeting in 1776, kind of gathering as a group in Green Springs, and then moving to Raccoon's Chase closer to the college here, right, College of William & Mary, and then into town by Jesse Cole later on. But that congregation grew from 200 in 1781 to 500. That's the second largest Baptist church in Virginia, black or white. In 1791, he charters the church with the Dover Baptist Association. This is an all-white Baptist association. He charters his church. It's accepted in 1793. And ironically, in that same year, that's when David Miller, who inherited his Jane Vobe's estate when she died in 1787, gave Gowan his free paper, his manumission paper.
I am curious now. You have raised the question of what the owner of Gowan Pamphlet did. She paid off a debt that theoretically was more than she could pay off.
Absolutely.
He went on to be probably the most successful Baptist preacher of any race. That's a mystery.
That's a miracle. And in mystery, too. Well, you know, Jane Vobe, it's not really ironic that Jane Vobe was able to pay off that debt in the years. She's a Moody, M-O-O-D-Y. They are tavern keepers, and she grew up in the tavern business. So she already had, I always say she had some business head in the family, and probably if Thomas had listened to her, they'd be a lot more profitable, you know. But, so Jane, that's why Jane Vobe was able to bring that tavern from sort of the doldrums in 1750 up to one of the most prominent taverns in all Virginia. That's why you have in that tavern, frequent in that tavern, General George Washington, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, you know, General Rochambeau, Lafayette. I mean, she's entertaining some very powerful elite people here. And they write about it, how well, you know, Jane Vobe is run. And that's the irony is that this is a woman in the 18th century that has a very powerful position as a tavern keeper, Christiana Campbell, the same way. You know, if you look at their documentation and the primary sources we have on those people, their slaves are treated a little differently. It's more of a negotiation. They are allowing them some humanness. And I'm wondering if it's because they have sort of an understanding that most slave owners don't have, as maybe being a woman in this society, having gone through some of maybe the oppressions, you know, of not being able to vote, not having a real say-so in the household, not, you know, except for the management of it, but also in society in particular. You know, maybe they kind of understand from a sensory standpoint the slave's predicament. And maybe they are treating them in a much different manner than most male owners. So this is something, again, another science we are looking at to try to figure out the psychological here, reasons why these slaves are treated different than other slaves, and why these slaves are not sold as frequently, why they are allowed more liberty. And someone like Galvin rise from his condition as being a slave by law here to being, as you say, one of the most prominent preachers in America. You know, I always say he came from being someone's piece of property to being a citizen, mm-hmm. which he did, and a very prominent citizen here, yes.
Did he ever get his freedom?
Yes, he did, 1793, David Miller. It was ironic because the month, 1793 is very interesting. It's the Haitian Rebellion. Toussaint Louverture is down there, and it's a bloodbath in Haiti. The Colonization Society to repatriate slaves that will get their freedom, free blacks to Africa, is really starting to bloom. And it's just a very interesting time. And so Gowan is in this moment where he's receiving his freedom at a very volatile time. And when most people after the revolution are headed out west to grab land and to make their lives out westward, America, he stays here. And he is here growing his church, and it's a movement because he has other churches that he's starting all over. It's a powerful movement. They have connection in Kingston, Jamaica, Nova Scotia, Sierra Leone, in Africa. These are First Baptist churches that started all over the place, and it has a lot to do with the home base, and that's Williamsburg. Williamsburg First Baptist Church is the first black church in America.
I am curious if you have thought about it, and if you haven't, let it go. What would Gowan pamphlet have become had he been born white and not enslaved? Because he obviously was a powerful and intelligent man.
That's a great question. Sometimes you fight harder when you're oppressed. You fight to be recognized as being a person and a human being. And sometimes that friction of that fight elevates you to places where you would never ever think you would be. What would happen if he was white, if he was free? Would he have had that fire inside? That burning desire to do what he did. I don't know if I can even answer that question. I would think that maybe he would not have had that deep burning fire to prove that he was somebody and that he could be more than what people say that he was, or the labels that were put on him as being slave here.
On the other hand, if he was allowed to develop his full potential and his full intelligence and he was encouraged to do things, he might have.
Well, he might have been president.
That's Colonial Williamsburg, past and present this time. Check history.org often. We'll post more for you to download and hear.